A billion years ago, there was nothing but space. Then one of God's wet farts threw all the planets in place. There were no signs of life on Mars or Venus, but planet Earth was blessed with two baby geniuses. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, we know everything. Baby geniuses, tell us something we don't know.
Hello, babies. Welcome to Baby Geniuses. I'm Emily.
I'm Lisa.
Thank you for listening to our show.
Thank you.
We are recording this before Thanksgiving. It's coming out after Thanksgiving. If you don't live in the U.S.,
it's a day where we make a lot of food and we eat it.
Yeah.
Let me tell you the history of the...
the story of the first Thanksgiving. No, Thanksgiving is a fucked up holiday,
but it is fun.
Have you ever looked up like what they ate at the first Thanksgiving?
No.
It's like
I'm going off like a third grader's knowledge of Thanksgiving, yeah. Which is false in every possible way.
So we think of like turkey, cranberry sauce, stuffing,
squash.
And I should look up the actual list, but it's like eel was the main thing.
Ew, what?
It was like a lot of eel. Well, eel was like a very popular food. It's just like a fish, you know?
I know. Eel's actually good. I don't know why I said ew.
Just because it's like they're so slippery. It's like you're thinking of what it would be like if one swam by you.
Yeah.
Wait. I want to look up the list now because I do think it's interesting.
Wow.
Okay.
What if you just had, Thanksgiving eels instead of turkey?
Yeah.
That's a vibe shift.
So eels.
Just eels. Just eels prepared in many different ways.
Wait.
And here's the eel pie.
Here is what they had at the first Thanksgiving.
All right.
The seafood they had was eel, lobster, clam, oysters, and mussels. The wild fowl that they had was turkey, duck, geese, swans, passenger pigeons.
Swans.
Yeah, they ate swans.
I'm already happy at the amount of different meat options here because, like, I'm not really a seafood person, but, like, all the fowl, great. Love it.
The vegetables, turnips, carrots, onions, garlic, pumpkins, beans, lettuce, spinach, cabbage, corn.
Great. Sounds good.
Fruit. Yeah. Fruit, blueberries, plums, grapes, gooseberries, raspberries, cranberries.
Delicious.
And then nuts, chestnuts, walnuts, beech nuts.
This sounds like a kind of feast they'd have in Redwall. Remember that series? Where it's like mice and squirrels and stuff. And they would have like great descriptions of what kind of food they ate. It was just very.
That sounds really good. And I've never heard of it.
It was just like very foragey. It was like sort of boring, but the food parts were good.
It's really weird how appealing like foraging and like shipwrecks and like survivalism just is. Like there's something about it. And just like. Why do I love stories of like, oh, it's like a little mouse and he's using a little like sardine can as a bed? Like, why do I love that?
I don't know. It's like if you imagine yourself getting shipwrecked or being a mouse, you're like, maybe I would be so resourceful.
Yeah, there's something about it that maybe it makes you feel safe to know that there are those options. But it's like, I don't even know if that's it.
It's cute. It's very cute. Although in practice, a sardine can bed. I mean, how would you get that smell out, really?
You could not get the smell out.
Never.
It would be so disgusting. This is...
You're just like, making yourself more appealing to cats to eat.
That's a really good point. Oh my God, I've never thought about that. Yeah, you should sleep in like a pile of shit. Oh boy, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Bon appetit.
Oh my God.
Just as a little follow-up on a previous episode, I wanted to say that, so I, you know, who knows when it was, a year ago, 10 years ago, 2 months ago, at some point we did the Wikipedia page for hobby tunneling.
Oh, yeah.
And that is how I found out about the Forestieri underground gardens in Fresno.
Oh.
And I have booked tickets.
Yes.
To go visit on my way back from Thanksgiving. And I'm really excited about it.
Yes. When you mentioned you were making a detour on your trip, I was hoping it was this.
Really?
Yeah. I've never forgotten that. Well, I kind of forgot what it was, but I knew there was like something in Fresno related to some wiki page that we'd done that I was really curious about. So I'm really excited to hear about that.
Yeah. I mean, knock on wood, nothing goes wrong like with our trip where, you know, there's You never know. The times that we live in. But if everything goes to plan, by the next time we record, I'll be able to tell you all about it.
Yes.
I'm very excited about it.
Getting those holes.
Speaking of getting in those holes, Lisa, I understand you finished Love Island.
I did. I finished it. I also finished Anna Karenina.
Did you finish them like simultaneously?
I kind of did. I was like going back and forth between a chapter of that and episode of Love Island, which is not like really something I would recommend. Was it you that made a joke that was like, oh, these like hot people are the great grandchildren of these old timey
hot people? Well, yeah, I think I said I was like, when I watch Love Island, I like to pretend that it's like the grandchildren of the people from Downton Abbey. Or the great grandchildren, I guess. Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm wheezing.
Because it is really funny to be like, oh yeah, Mr. Bates's great great grandson is like getting his dick sucked in The Hideaway.
God, that's funny. Anna Karenina, really good. It's a banger. Yeah. I loved it. What a weird ending. Tolstoy's crazy.
I've never read it.
It's just, okay. It's really good. I really enjoyed it. It's got a lot going for it. It even like, it has really good horse stuff in it where there's this like really sensitive wild mare who's like totally symbolic for Anna. It's great. Love Island, I had to fast forward through the last week of it.
Yes. The last week is so boring. There's no more like, there's no turnover in the couples. It's just like, oh, here's like a clip show of all of the romance that we did.
Yeah. Nothing happens.
Yeah. Very rarely something happens. Every so often, someone really fumbles the bag and is like, I'm actually going to break up with you the day before the finals.
That would have been exciting. it seemed like Luca and Gemma were on the brink, but they made it through. For a little while. I haven't seen the reunion episode yet. That's the one thing I haven't watched. Saving that.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of sick of all these people.
Okay. So spoilers abound for season 8 of Love Island UK, because we are going to talk about it now just for a little bit. Because now that you've watched all of it. Okay. So you watched the final.
Yeah.
Do you know who won?
Yeah.
Did you look up how much they won by?
No.
Okay. So Ekansu and Davide won.
Yeah.
What would you guess? So the three couples in the final were Ekansu and Davide, Gemma and Luca.
Yeah.
I guess there was four couples, right?
Yeah, Tasha and Andrew. And
Tasha and Andrew and Dami and India.
Dami and India were robbed. They should have won. But anyways.
I was rooting for them as well.
Yeah.
But I did like Ekansu and Davide as well.
Sure.
So you were rooting for Dami and India.
Yeah.
What did you think it was like the results were going to be going into the final?
I thought it was going to be Dami, India, then Tasha, Andrew, then Gemma, Luca, then Davide, Ekansu. It was like a complete opposite of what happened, basically.
Okay. So how much do you think Davide and Ekansu won by?
Like how many votes?
Like what percentage of the, like?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay.
Tell me.
Ekansu and Davide got like almost 70%. of the votes. It was like the biggest landslide in Love Island history.
I mean, they were really entertaining.
They were very entertaining. They were like, if you guys didn't watch it, and I'm not saying, and I don't necessarily recommend that you do watch it. Why would you watch it?
Don't.
It's, I have gone on record and said that I do not support that this is the season that Lisa started with. I think that if you don't watch it, or if you do, what, I don't remember where I was going with this sentence, but Davide has a really thick Italian accent, and every so often they get him to say the word spaghetti, and I really love it.
spaghetti. And
Ekansu was like a soap opera actress, and like they were just like the most high drama couple, but then they're also the funniest.
Yeah, they were really funny.
Yeah.
I found them annoying at times. I like Ekansu. I find her annoying too. like she just seems like someone, if you were friends with her, you'd be like, oh my God.
Yes.
Davide, I really hated in the beginning. And then now I think he's the hottest one on the show and the funniest.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This whole thing was like a prison experiment. Like, I don't understand why people would subject themselves to it. They don't get paid nearly enough. Like, the final prize being like $50,000 that they split is so little.
It's so little, but everyone leaves and like everyone in the finals immediately signed a $1 million contract.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, you get like all those those brands and stuff. You get to.
I still don't think it's worth it. Like, I think it ruins a lot of people's lives.
It ruins your life. Like, the way the fans are, like, you know, I kind of browsed the Reddit for him a little bit just because I was looking up some stuff I was curious about to see people's take on it. And I was like, wow, these people are really, really parasocial. It's really scary.
It's really messed up. And they're just like, they hound them.
Yeah, their Instagram comments are like people were leaving the meanest Instagram comments on Paige's Instagram and stuff. I'm like, why are you trolling
Paige
her?
Paige got so much shit. Yeah. It's really messed up.
Because she like...
She was
Jax,
dating
basically.
This incredibly she dating this incredibly controlling guy on the show who was like borderline violent almost. Like, he left the show. He was like begging to leave the show, apparently. And then he like they only let him quit when he was like, I'm afraid I'm going to hurt someone.
Yeah, he was getting crazy weird.
Yeah. And so they broke up and she started dating a new guy. And like the British public have been relentless about how she should have stayed with Jax, even though he like cheated on her.
I know, he's so fucked.
Yeah, it's all fucked up.
He was so
immature.
It's
so fucked up, and yet it is a very wonderful. And I just started a new season of Love Island Australia.
Oh man,
yeah, it's a lot. Now you're free. Are you going to do with your freedom?
I don't know. I've ended two very long things. And I, you know, sometimes I feel a little depressed when I'm done with something like that. I'm watching like I just watched the 2012 Joe Wright version of Anna Karenina, the movie, which is like, I tried to watch a while ago and I couldn't make it through it. But now that I've read the book, I'm like, okay, this makes more sense. It's like, it's a very suffocating production. It's like kind of hard to watch. It's like it's beautiful, but it's just, there's so much to it. Like, he designed the whole thing like it's a stage play, and there's just constantly like rotating sets and things. It's really crazy.
Oh, wow.
And then I'm going to watch the 1997 movie adaptation, which has, I believe, 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. But Alfred Molina's in it, so it can't be all bad.
He accounts for the 26%.
Yes. People are like, oh, but Alfred Molina plays Levin and he's great. So, I'm just kind of, I like to just like go so hard on one piece of media, you know, and just I think that's.
Or one actor or one.
Oh,
like,
yeah. One actor. Yeah. I do that a lot.
Yeah. I appreciate that about you.
Oh,
you're
thanks.
Very dedicated. You're like a completist for categories that no one considers a category.
I'm obsessive.
Yeah.
But then I always taper off. Like, My Spader watch kind of trickled off a little bit, but I'll get back into that.
And now, like, I started watching Boston Legal. It's so bad.
Are you still watching it?
I had sort of fallen off because obviously it's a terrible show.
But wonderful.
I was talking about it. So my sister-in-law is a lawyer. And loves really trash TV. Like, she's always binge watching, you know, like Felicity or like some shit, you know. She just like loves like hour long dramas from the early aughts, late 90s, you know.
Nice.
And like, I guess my husband's dad used to like watch Boston Legal a lot. Like Peter's familiar with it from that, which just like totally makes sense because it's such a dad show, because it's all these like middle-aged guys being like, fuck you, I'm the king of the lawyers, and then like
sleeping with beautiful women
sleeping with like 21 year olds who have somehow finished law school, and like everyone loves them for being an asshole. And so we were ended up talking about it, and like then I was like, we should just watch an episode. And then it's like, since then, I know that like she has not only like caught up to where I was, but I think she has watched further than where I was.
Oh, wow. It's her first time watching it.
Yes. And so she's like, I was like, Peter was like, it's weird how like we watched one episode and then Molly just like got really hooked on it. Yeah. And I was like, honestly, knowing Molly, I'm like, I should have seen that coming. And so now I've been watching it again because they keep texting us about it.
That's great. I'm very satisfied by that. I'm no longer watching it, but I'm glad I got you hooked on a bad show.
You were gonna ask me, I think, about the like I did like a Instagram Q&A.
Yeah, you did some fuck, marry, kills, and
and Molly was the one who asked me about fuck, marry, kill, right. Boston Legal.
No, you got that one spot on, because it was fuck Alan Shore,
a.k.a. James Spader.
Yeah. I can't remember anyone's
name.
Kill
William Shatner.
Yes.
And then marry Candace Bergen, who I just met Candace Bergen in the show. Like, she just arrived. So
I thought you meant in real life. I just met her.
Oh, no.
We went to brunch. I'm like, what?
Oh, I wish. Oh,
she's great. Goodness. I'm glad they added her to the show. She was much needed.
Yeah.
They were like, wow, we need a woman.
Who
gets any respect. But I wanted to ask about your fuck, marry, kill for friends, because you were going to marry Joey, which, yes, of course.
Uh-huh.
Kill Chandler. Fuck Ross.
Uh-huh.
I'm surprised.
Okay. Let me walk you through my reasoning here.
Okay.
So, okay. At first glance, you'd think marry Chandler, fuck Joey, kill Ross. That's like your first instinct.
No, I thought I'd marry Joey, absolutely, from the beginning.
Okay. Okay. For me, like, the reason why I would think that is because you're like, oh, well, Joey's like the sex guy and Chandler's right. like the funny guy who in real life I would probably have a crush on.
Right.
But in the show, Joey's the only one. It's not that they're all homophobic. Joey's the least homophobic.
Yeah.
and like the least insecure and jealous and like horrible. He's the nicest.
Yeah.
So I was like, you have to marry Joey, which just leaves the fucking question.
Yeah.
Because I do think I like Chandler more than Ross. But in terms of the canon of the show, who we know, like, it's established that both of them are good at sex.
Yeah, both Chandler and Ross.
Yes. I'm like,
I thought Chandler sucked in bed, but
Chandler
then got
sucked
better.
In bed, but then got better. And like, there is a point where like Monica says he's the best she's ever had.
Wow.
Including Richard.
Better than and Richard? So, oh my God. I don't believe it. She's lying.
Yes. But then there's also like in the episodes where like Rachel and Ross are like thinking about sleeping together again.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel's like, you were always very good at the stuff, you know, like, so it's implied that Ross is also good in bed.
Yeah.
So it's like a dead heat. And then you have to think about who you're actually attracted to. I do find David Schwimmer slightly more attractive.
Wow. Okay.
Than Matthew Perry. I did think like Matthew Perry was cuter before he got his teeth fixed.
Oh yeah.
But I do think that that had less to do with, like, him, like, wanting to have perfect teeth and more to do with, like, his drug issues.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also the episode where Chandler has an impotence issue. And I was like, well, if we're down to that kind of tiebreaker, I guess I have to go with Ross.
I like the idea of you were thinking this over for like 50 minutes before you responded.
Well, look, it takes me a while to talk through it, but it went through my mind in a half a second, all of that information.
Yeah.
I am a friend's supercomputer, just doing a million computations a second.
But only for friends. And possibly for Frasier.
The Frasier one took longer, and I still don't feel sure of my answer.
Yeah. I'm not really a Frasier person, so I didn't know. Oh, you wanted to kill Niles. I was like, oh, interesting.
The Frasier one, it was like, marry Marty, fuck Frasier, kill Niles. And it's just because it's like, I think physically Frasier's a little bit more my type than Niles.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to fuck Marty. And Marty, I guess I wanted to marry. I thought about killing Marty, but then it's like, I don't think I'd want to be married to Niles or Frasier.
Yeah.
So, yeah. At least Marty's like old and it would be over sooner. I don't know.
There's no winners there.
And he's got a dog that I like.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So what would your fuck, marry, kill for the cast of Friends be?
Oh, no, I think your reasoning is right. I think marry Joey. I think I'd probably fuck Chandler, kill Ross.
Okay.
Just because Ross was, like, annoying and whiny and creepy.
Yeah.
Towards the end. And Chandler.
That's not your type.
Not my type. And Chandler's funny, and I like funny guys.
Yeah, do you want him doing like bits while you're doing it?
I mean, that's what I'm used to. So that's my entire sexual experience.
Just doing gags. I usually try and like, I think of the gags while it's happening and then I wait until it's over to say what I thought.
Oh, that's nice of you. I don't wait. And a long time ago, I tried hooking up with guys who didn't do bits at all and I didn't understand. It was like we were speaking a different language. I'm like, because I would do a bit and they looked at me like I was insane. And then I'm like, wait, you just want to have sex? You don't want to like be weird? I don't understand.
Oh my
God. Oh my God. Why are you so earnest and serious? This is terrifying.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm fucked up.
Is it time for Chunch Chat?
Oh, first, sure. But first I wanted to talk about something non-TV related for once.
Yes.
I got my very first mammogram.
Oh, wow. Did it suck ass?
It sucked so bad. It hurt so much more than I was expecting. I was in shock.
Oh, no. They hurt really bad, apparently.
They hurt so bad. Have you ever gotten one?
I don't think so.
I've had, so like half my friends were like, huh, that's weird. It doesn't hurt at all. And the other half were like, oh yeah, wow.
Yeah, your friends who were like, what? They just had a breast exam. They didn't have a mammogram probably.
No, they
right?
had a mammogram. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. They just were like, oh, I didn't think it was like that big a deal. It didn't, you know, it was a little uncomfortable,
Does it hurt? Okay, your friends who said it was didn't hurt that bad. How big are their tits?
No, some of them had like small, dense tits like me. And they're dense. Like, they're so dense that it said so on my results. Which, by the way, nothing bad's going on in there. All good. I got it
done. Is it bad that I didn't even think to ask?
No. I got it done early. You know, I'm 39. I think you don't really need to do it till you're, like, 45. But I just, you know, I was like, I don't know what's going on in there. It feels like I describe it as, like, a stocking full of quarters. I don't know. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to do self-exams, and I'm like, I don't know. It's all lumps, and it always hurts. I don't know. So I got, you know, an exam just to make sure. But yeah, nothing suspicious. My tits have nothing to hide. But yeah, no, some of my friends have tits that are similar to mine. And yeah, most of them were smallish. And they said it didn't hurt.
Okay.
Some of the ones with bigger tits said it didn't hurt. I don't know. I think it just, I don't know. Maybe it's just my own pain tolerance. I also went at like a bad time of month and I forgot to take any like Tylenol or anything before going. So that was a big mistake.
Oh, yeah. That's a mistake.
But yeah, I was yelling.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then
Lisa.
I was like, I was also laughing a lot and I was like trying to make the technician laugh to try to like cope with it. Cause I was like, if I don't do this, I'm going to cry. but then afterwards, Adam took me out to ice cream. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. So it was worth it in the end.
And to get the results.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Peace of mind. Very good to have.
But ice cream.
But ice cream. I got ice cream and cookies. It was great.
Ooh.
Oh, God.
Well, congratulations. I'm very sorry that was painful.
Thanks. It was one of those things where I was like, if, if this was like a procedure that men had to do more often, I feel like they would have found a way to do it that was less painful. But I don't know if that's true. Maybe this really is the only way to do it.
I mean, men get mammograms sometimes.
Sometimes. Not often.
But they should have to squish their penis in a thing.
Yeah.
Or something.
Their nuts.
Right?
They should put their nuts in a vice.
Cis men, of course, we are talking about.
Yes, 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 yes.
There are, you know, plenty of men who have to get mammograms. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, point is, we shouldn't have to go to the doctor ever, actually. That's my actual stance on things.
That's my belief as well.
Yeah.
Shut down the hospitals. No. Let's do Chunch Chat.
We'll be right back with Chunch Chat, our regular segment where we talk about any news in the world of Martha Stewart's pony, Ben Chunch.
Chunch. When the clock strikes noon, we could have a picnic lunch, fine wine, full moon, and we're chatting about Chunch. Ben Chunch.
I have no new Chunch news, and I don't really want to talk about Martha Stewart this week because I'm kind of annoyed with her. Like, I saw a video of her hugging Kim Kardashian, and I'm just like, ah, fuck these people. I'm so happy Rick Caruso lost.
Yes, let's just talk about the fucking election results in LA. Let's talk about Hugo Soto Martinez won in CD13. I'm so fucking excited about that.
Hell yeah.
Let's talk about Rick Caruso losing by a lot. I'm so excited about that. And I think we should clown on the celebrities who endorsed him forever.
Forever. I will never forget.
We should not let them forget. Katy Perry, you're a fucking clown.
Gwyneth Paltrow,
you're a fucking clown. Kim Kardashian, you're a fucking clown. Chris Pratt, you're a fucking clown. Who else?
Snoop Dogg.
Snoop Dogg. Fuck you, Snoop Dogg.
Dude.
Snoop Dogg, yeah.
Come on.
He's like the easiest. He only cares about money.
Yeah.
This we know.
We know this.
Yeah. I feel like there's a whole list, let me find it, of Caruso celebrity endorsements.
It was funny to me that, like, the phrasing with it was that, like, oh, this is the guy who's endorsed by celebrities, as if no celebrities endorse Karen Bass, which is not true.
Yeah.
Like, there were celebrities who endorsed Bass, but it just felt like the worst celebrities were so loud about Caruso being their friend. And it was, like, so maddening.
Yeah, it was really so fucking frustrating because also it was like Katy Perry was like tweeting angrily about like Roe versus Wade being overturned and like, you know, pro-choice causes. And then she endorses Rick Caruso, who has given so much money to pro-life, like anti-choice, you know, political causes. He's not a champion of abortion access by any stretch of the imagination.
And you shouldn't spend $100 million on ads trying to buy yourself a position. Like it was sick the amount of money he spent.
Yeah. If you guys don't know what we're talking about, Rick Caruso is a billionaire who owns some iconic malls in LA. And they
love
are iconic
these malls. Love,
for being
love
like,
the Grove, love the Americana.
Yes. They're good malls. No one's saying they're not good malls, but they're also like, they're cheesecake factories, basically.
Yeah.
They all have cheesecake factories.
And they have fountains and they just like blast Frank Sinatra all day long.
Yeah.
It's a little dystopian, but we go to them. We love them. These are our landmarks in LA, you know, like Paris has the Eiffel Tower, you know.
Yeah.
New York has the Empire State Building. LA has the Americana and the Grove.
And like he was endorsed by any celebrity who has been outspoken about the fact that like they think that they shouldn't have to look at homeless people, and that's as much as they've thought about the problem.
And they all live in like Calabasas or Bel Air and they're worried about crime.
Yes. Elon Musk endorsed him. George Lopez, that was disappointing.
Oh, yeah.
Noah Centineo, that sucks.
Oh yeah, that sucked.
Yeah. Catherine McPhee, who I refuse to learn who that is.
Oh, I liked her. I liked her for a bit because she was on American Idol, right? And then she was in Smash, which was that like really wild,
oh, right.
wild show that I really yeah. enjoyed.
Scooter Braun, who I Ugh. Think is supposed to be evil, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Netflix CEO Ted Sarandos.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, like, the celebrities who endorsed Karen Bass, who was Caruso's opponent, were...
Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, Yvette Nicole Brown, Steven Spielberg, Norman Lear.
These are our...
Cheryl Lee Ralph,
these are top-tier celebs. The best.
Yeah. yeah. Barack Obama, John Legend, like, a lot of people. And it's very satisfying that she won. I still think that she's probably going to be a shitty mayor because we just only have shitty mayors, but I'm glad that it's not going to be Rick Caruso.
Yeah, and she's like an old-fashioned Democrat. And we need someone a little more progressive, but I think she'll work with the council members better, especially the progressive ones. Like,
absolutely. And she'll be accountable to the Democratic Party in a way that Rick Caruso was not. And I think we can, like... try and hold her accountable in a way that we couldn't with Rick Caruso because he doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so fuck Martha Stewart for hugging Kim Kardashian is the point of this chunch chat.
I'm over Kim Kardashian. Fuck her.
Yeah.
But just to add some horse news in here, Junie and I just had our 4-year anniversary.
Oh, yay.
And I got portraits taken of her because I saw someone post an ad that she was in town and she takes portraits of horses wearing Christmas wreaths. And I was like, I want to do that. So I got her to come, and she put a Christmas wreath on Junie. And it was made out of plastic, but Junie spent the entire photo shoot trying to eat it. Like, it was a candy necklace. And she just got so impatient with having to stand still and not eat the delicious wreath. So it's like,
great.
Mostly photos of me, like, wrestling with her. But
I love it.
I'm excited to get those pictures.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see them. All right, that concludes Chunch Chat. We will be right back with One on Fun.
One on Fun.
Lisa, welcome to One on Fun. Lisa.
Mm-hmm.
What's something that you've made? No. Okay. Wait. No. What am I going to say? I was going to say, what's something that you've made with your hands? But that's literally everything that you do. I was like, that you're proudest of. But I didn't want it to be like, not art, but yeah. What's like, but also, I don't know. Like,
what if I made with my hands that's not
like,
art?
Like, what's something that you've DIY'd
mm-hmm.
that you wouldn't necessarily DIY that you think came out really good?
What's something that I DIY'd? What have I DIY'd? I'm like, I fixed my dishwasher the other day.
That counts?
Well, not really, because it's broken again.
Okay, but like, you want to think along those lines, I'm giving you permission.
I was proud of myself because I like watched a YouTube video and then Adam came downstairs and he was like, wow, you actually just like jumped right into fixing this thing. And then we like worked on it together. But now, yeah, it's busted again. I don't know.
Damn.
You know what I'm good at? I'm really good at like painting a room, like doing like wall paint.
Yeah.
I think I'm pretty good at that.
That counts.
Yeah. I was trying
to painted the one you're in, right?
I did.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of anything else that I've DIY'd, but I haven't done anything like that lately.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty impatient with that stuff generally. I'm not a Martha Stewart. I don't, you know, don't do a lot of housework things. Okay. I guess, yeah, room painting. Sorry, it's a boring answer.
No, I like it.
Emily.
Yeah.
Okay, fuck, marry, kill. the guy from Chef Reacts, the TikTok guy.
Yeah.
Davide from Love Island.
This is hard already.
And Joey from Friends.
Oh my God.
Really hard.
This is really hard. Okay.
We both talked about how we now have developing crushes on the Chef Reacts guy.
Yeah.
Even though I've said that chefs are out of control, but I also think chefs are hot. So.
Yeah, I think that it's like widely accepted that chefs are hot.
Yeah.
It's like one of the hot jobs you can have.
So hot.
Yeah. It's like, just look at Emily in Paris. That's the whole premise of that show.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's right. I forgot that guy's a chef.
Yeah. And the bear.
The bear. Like
everyone wants to fuck that guy from the bear.
We've all seen the bear right now, yeah. Right? Yeah, at this point.
Or if you haven't seen it, you know that everyone wants to fuck that guy.
That's the main thing about it.
Yeah. Okay. I think I am going to probably marry the Chef Reacts guy.
Hell yeah.
Because I think both Davide and Joey are too stupid to be married to.
Yeah.
If I have the choice, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, I'd much rather be married. I mean, even though he probably wouldn't cook at home.
No, he would.
Still.
Yeah,
no, he says in his videos that he doesn't like to cook at home. Like, he just eats, like, stoner food at home. He doesn't
what?
Like to.
But, yeah. Like, once in a while, I feel like he'd make you such
a
good
breakfast.
Once in
a while, he would. I would be like, please. And then I guess I would probably fuck Joey and kill Davide.
Yeah, I think I'd.
I have a feeling Davide is probably not that good in the sack because he knows how pretty he is.
I know,
and
he's so
just
pretty.
Thinks he doesn't have to try.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
That's my guess.
I would do the same.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you for agreeing with me.
And I agree with you for agreeing with me for agreeing with you. I do kind of want to know more about Chef Reacts guy and what he cooks and like.
I want to know. I'm would love some information. I was saying to Lisa earlier that I feel like he wears baseball hats from a bunch of different teams to throw people off the scent of where he lives. Because he's worn like an Atlanta hat, an Oakland A's hat, like a Baltimore Orioles hat. Like he's all over the place.
I don't want to invade his privacy. I do.
I demand to invade his privacy.
We're going to dox him on the pod. No, let's not.
Oh, boy.
Oh, brother.
So many people I know are listening to this podcast right now.
and writing you off forever.
Yeah. all right. That concludes One on Fun. We will be right back with Wiki of the Week.
Hey, I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
Listen, you like podcasts, right? Sure you do. Don't try and lie to me. You're listening to one right now, so why not try a different one called R1, The Flophouse?
Uh-huh, and on The Flophouse, we watch a movie and talk about it. And then sometimes we also do other stuff.
It's all meant to be funny and fun, and we think you'll have a good time. And just to be clear, the name of the podcast is not R1, The Flophouse. It's just called The Flophouse. I do a lot of correcting, Dan.
The Flophouse. A lot of correcting, Dan.
Hey, it's John Moe, inviting you to listen to Depression Mode with John Moe, where I talk about mental health and the lives we live with all kinds of people. Famous writers.
David Sedaris, welcome to Depression Mode.
Thanks so much for having me.
Movie stars.
Jamie Lee Curtis, welcome to Depression Mode.
I am happy to be here.
Musicians.
I am in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm talking to Amy Mann.
Great to talk to you.
And song exploders.
Hrishikesh Hirway, welcome to Depression Mode.
Thanks so much for having me.
Everyone's opening up on Depression Mode on Maximum Fun.
It's time for a
Wiki of the Week.
This week's Wikipedia page was sent to us by Lou. Thank you, Lou. It is the Wikipedia page for The Clock of the Long Now.
I just like the name. I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
But it's such a weird group of letters or words to throw together. Clock of the Long Now.
it's definitely sounds like something we would have already done, and I don't think we've done it. Lou said that they found it by hitting the page Cuckoo Clocks in Popular Culture through the random article function, which I think is a really fun. If you are like really want to get a Wikipedia page on our show, I strongly recommend like going on a search through the random article function versus like sending us something from depths of Wikipedia, which we're not going
to
do.
Love depths of Wikipedia. Shout out to Annie, but she's great. But yeah, but it's been exposed, you know, at that point. So we don't want to do it like right after she's done it. It's sort of,
yeah, someone's already covering it. Our mission is similar to that mission, which is to like expose people to new and interesting Wikipedia pages, and us covering the same ground as them is not a good look.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
what is the clock of the long now?
The clock of the long now, also called the 10,000 year clock.
That is a long now.
That's a long ass now. Is a mechanical clock under construction that is designed to keep time for 10,000 years. It is being built by the Long Now Foundation. A 2-meter prototype is on display at the Science Museum in London. Here's the thing about London. I feel like they have a bunch of museums that are named in a very generic way because they feel like they're they're like, oh, it's just called the Science Museum.
Yeah.
Because London thinks it's the center of the world.
Yeah, it's kind of presumptuous.
As of June 2018, 2 more prototypes are on display at the Long Now Museum and Store at Fort Mason Center in San Francisco. Man, damn, I guess I got to make another fucking field trip.
Yeah. The project was conceived by Danny Hillis in 1986. The first prototype of the clock began working on December 31st, 1999, just in time to display the transition to the year 2000. At midnight on New Year's Eve, the date indicator changed from 01999 to 02000, and the chime struck twice.
Wow. The manufacture and site construction of the first full-scale prototype clock is being funded by Jeff Bezos's Bezos Expeditions with $42 million, and it is on land which Bezos owns in Texas.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
Not to him, though.
Not for him.
God.
Pocket change.
Pennies.
Yes.
Purpose. Yeah, why? In the words of Stuart Brand, a founding board member of the foundation, such a clock, if sufficiently impressive and well-engineered, would embody deep time for people. It would be charismatic to visit, interesting to think about, and famous enough to become iconic in the public discourse. Ideally, it would do for thinking about time what the photographs of Earth from space have done for thinking about the environment. Such icons reframe the way people think. Have those photos of Earth from space actually helped the environment?
I mean, I don't know if they have, like, really made us think about the environment that much.
I don't think they haven't hurt, but
I do think they have. I do think that, like, photos of Earth from space have encouraged a perspective on, like, how the world is connected.
Yeah,
I do think they probably have.
We're all in this together, you know? It's
It's all about reframing, like, how connected you are to the rest of humanity. And I think that the clock is for that, too. It's to be like, think about 10,000 years in the future. Like, even just suggesting the idea of this clock forces you to think about 10,000 years in the future and what the world is going to be like. Mm. And thinking about that, I think, is a noble impulse.
Yeah, that's nice. Anything that lets you kind of zoom out and you're just like a little ant in this giant ant farm.
But instead of thinking that, it's also what you do with that perspective. Like, you can think either nothing matters because I'm an ant, or you can think, like, I have to do what I can to make sure that, like, we're still around 10,000 years from now.
It's confusing that Jeff Bezos is into stuff like this and, you know, goes to the Amazon rainforest and talks about, like, how to help it and whatnot. But then he's also building, like, the world's largest yacht.
Yeah.
I just don't understand.
And also just, like, bringing back slavery, basically.
Yeah, like, there's just so...
I'm just kidding. Slavery has never gone away.
It's never left.
Yeah,
there's just so much contradictory stuff there.
Yeah, it's contradictory impulses. I don't want to say it's fascinating, because that's not a word I want to attribute to him.
It's interesting.
It's interesting.
I don't like it.
Design. I want to build a clock that ticks once a year. This is a quote. Okay. I want to build a clock that ticks
once a year. I thought you were just talking about, like, your plans for...
The century hand advances once every 100 years, and the cuckoo comes out on the millennium. I want the cuckoo to come out every millennium for the next 10,000 years. If I hurry, I should finish the clock in time to see the cuckoo come out for the first time. And this is a quote from Danny Hillis, The Millennium Clock, from Wired Scenarios in 1995. I have no idea if that's like a magazine or, oh yeah, it's from Wired Magazine, but it's from a feature called Wired Scenarios.
Hmm.
But was that the inspiration for this? It doesn't say. It just has that quote with no fucking context. All right.
He had some basic design principles and requirements for the clock. First of all, longevity. The clock should be accurate even after 10,000 years and must not contain valuable parts such as jewels, expensive metals, or special alloys that might be looted. Yeah, that's a good call.
Smart, smart.
Here, you do the next one.
Number two, maintainability. Future generations should be able to keep the clock working, if necessary, with nothing more advanced than Bronze Age tools and materials.
Cool. Three, transparency. The clock should be understandable without stopping or disassembling it. No functionality should be opaque.
Okay. Number four, evolvability. It should be possible to improve the clock over time.
Hmm. And lastly, five, scalability. To ensure that the final large clock will work properly, smaller prototypes must be built and tested.
Oh. Okay. Whether the clock will actually receive continued care and maintenance for such a long time is debatable. Hillis chose the 10,000-year goal to be just within the limits of plausibility. There are technological artifacts, such as fragments of pots and baskets from 10,000 years in the past, so there is some precedent for human artifacts surviving this long, although very few human artifacts have been continuously tended for more than a few centuries.
Whoa.
That's an interesting way of thinking about it, I think.
It is, yeah. Power considerations. Many options were considered for the power source of the clock, but most were rejected due to their inability to meet the requirements. For example, nuclear power and solar power systems would violate the principles of transparency and longevity. In the end, Hillis decided to require regular human winding of a falling weight design for updating the clock face, because the clock design already assumes regular human maintenance.
Oh. Ew. Yeah, I like that.
I approve.
However, the clock is designed to keep time even when not being wound. If there is no attention for long periods of time, the clock uses the energy captured by changes in the temperature between day and night on the mountaintop above to power its timekeeping apparatus.
They've thought of everything.
They have.
Timing considerations. The timing mechanism for such a long-lasting clock needs to be reliable and robust as well as accurate. The options considered but rejected as sources of timing for the clock included...
self-contained clocks. Most of these methods are inaccurate. The clock will slowly lose the correct time, but are reliable. That is, the clock will not suddenly stop working. Other methods are accurate but opaque, meaning that the clock is difficult to read or understand. What the fuck did I just read?
I don't know. This includes a bunch of stuff. We don't have to read this whole thing, but it's like gravity pendulum, torsion pendulum, balance wheel, water flow. These are all examples of clocks that are not accurate. Tuning fork.
Yeah.
That's a clock? Huh?
Piezoelectric crystal oscillator. Opaque. Difficult to maintain. Yeah, no shit, it's opaque. What the fuck does that mean?
Atomic decay. Difficult to measure precisely.
Yeah.
External
events that the clock could track or be adjusted by.
Many of these methods are accurate. Some external cycles are very uniform over huge stretches of time, but they're unreliable. The clock could stop working completely if it failed to track the external event properly. Others have separate difficulties. So this includes stuff like daily temperature cycle or tidal forces or the Earth's rotating inertial frame.
Yeah.
Tectonic motion.
Orbital dynamics, difficult to scale.
Solar Hillis alignment.
Hillis concluded that no single source of timing could meet the requirements. As a compromise, the clock will use an accurate but unreliable timer to adjust an inaccurate but reliable timer, creating a phase-locked loop. In the current design, a slow mechanical oscillator based on a torsional pendulum keeps time inaccurately but reliably. At noon, the light from the sun, a timer that is accurate but due to weather unreliable, is concentrated on a segment of metal through a lens. The metal buckles and the buckling force resets the clock to noon. The combination can, in principle, provide both reliability and long-term accuracy. That's interesting. Okay.
Displaying the time and date. Many of the usual units displayed on clocks, such as hours and calendar dates, may have little meaning after 10,000 years. However, every human culture counts days, months, and years. all of which are based on lunar and solar cycles.
There are also longer natural cycles, such as the 25,765-year precession of Earth's axis. On the other hand, the clock is a product of our time, and it seems appropriate to pay homage to our current arbitrary systems of time measurement. In the end, it seemed best to display both the natural cycles and some of the current cultural cycles. This is very similar to the, like, nuclear warnings, like people trying to figure out what's going to be readable in the future.
Yeah, this is a dangerous place. Do not come, you know, just like trying to put signals up. This reminds me of last time when we were talking about what jobs we'd be worst at. I think I'd be worst at working on this clock.
Yeah, I'd be really, really bad at working on this clock.
I would mess up the clock.
No part of this makes any sense to me.
I think we can kind of skim a little bit.
Yeah, I think we can skim the rest. It's mostly just like the concept of this idea.
Yeah, there's like time calculations, trying to achieve precise ratios with gears.
We're not talking about
the location.
That.
Like
the location, I think, is interesting.
Yeah, though. Where is this thing?
So the Long Now Foundation has purchased the top of Mount Washington near Ely, Nevada, which is surrounded by Great Basin National Park, for the permanent storage of the full-size clock once it is constructed. It will be housed in a series of rooms, the slowest mechanisms visible first, in the white limestone cliffs, approximately 10,000 feet up the Snake Range. The site's dryness, remoteness, and lack of economic value should protect the clock from corrosion, vandalism, and development. Hillis chose this area of Nevada in part because it is home to a number of dwarf bristlecone pines, which the foundation notes are nearly 5,000 years old. The clock will be almost entirely underground and only accessed by foot traffic from the east once complete.
Wow.
Yeah.
Those pines might burn down eventually, but...
Before
building the public clock in Nevada, the foundation is building a full-scale clock of similar design in a mountain near Van Horn, Texas. The test drilling for the underground construction at this site was started in 2009. The site is on property owned by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos, who is also funding its construction. The lessons learned in the construction of this first full-scale 10,000-year clock will inform the final design of the clock in Nevada.
Wow. Inspiration and support. The project is supported by the Long Now Foundation, which also supports a number of other very long-term projects, including the Rosetta Project to preserve the world's languages and the Long Bet Project.
What's the Long Bet Project?
I don't know. The Long Bet Project is...
This just goes to the Long Now Foundation.
Yeah. The fuck? Okay.
The fuck? Neil Stephenson's 2008 novel Anathem, you say that, was partly inspired by his involvement with the project, to which he contributed 3 pages of sketches and notes. The Long Now Foundation sells a soundtrack for the novel with profits going to the project.
Oh, wow. Musician Brian Eno gave the clock of the Long Now its name.
Yes, okay, that's amazing. That's amazing. Okay. Oh my God, what a great reveal at the very end of this.
Great reveal, and coined the term Long Now in an essay. He has collaborated with Hillis on the writing of music for the chimes for a future prototype.
That's fantastic,
yeah. To answer your question, the Long Bet Project was created by the Long Now Foundation to propose and keep track of bets on long-term events and stimulate discussion about the future.
Hmm.
They described the Long Bet Project as a public arena for enjoyably competitive predictions of interest to society with philanthropic money at stake.
This is how
one example bet would be about whether people will regularly fly on pilotless aircraft by 2030.
This is how, like, scientists and theorists gamble.
Yeah.
They place long bets.
Bets that were resolved in 2010 include predictions about peak oil, print on demand, modern obsolescence, and commercially available 100-qubit quantum computers.
Cool.
All right. Wow.
Wow.
This is, do you think that the clock is going to make it?
That's really hard to say. I don't know. I'm just a little ant. It's hard to think outside of my... It's very hard to think outside of your own lifespan, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like this human tendency to assume that the world will end with you, and that's just not true at all.
I also think there's a human tendency to assume that, like, everything that we make should be preserved.
Yeah.
That, like, the things of our time will be important forever.
Yeah.
And I think that is hubristic, but it's also like very human.
Yeah. But then we do like seeing like the results of archaeological digs and stuff. Like we do like those treasures.
Yes, that's true. I wonder though, sometimes like if people from those times would be like, this is what you think is important from us?
Yeah.
although when it's like King Tut's tomb, it's like, yeah, they knew. It was very clearly communicated that this was important. Maybe not everyone agreed on it, but like that is the message to take from this.
The whole pyramid thing is like, you're going to be really into this. We've set booby traps because we know how into this you are.
You guys are going to go fucking ape shit for this thing.
Oh my God, you're going to lose your fucking minds when you see these gold scarabs. And they're right. They're so right.
Yeah.
I liked nothing better when I was a kid than like going to the Egyptian museum and that stuff. So cool.
I have like a complicated relationship right now with things from the past where like I feel like I need to clean out everything from my house, and I feel so like, am I allowed to get rid of things that are like hand-me-downs? And I'm like, how much do I hang on to from people from the past?
It's so hard to know. Like, Adam's someone who likes to hold on to stuff. So I'll be getting rid of things. And he's like, I have this like box of My Little Ponies. And I was like, where do I put these? And he's like, you should keep them. They're so pretty. Look, this one's so cute.
Like, you're like, this isn't helping.
Yeah. He's like, you can keep all your horse toys. Like, so I have boxes and boxes of them. But I'm like, will these ever hold like a kind of psychic power for me? Or has that gone away?
Like, you think they might, like, come back and get revenge on you if you get rid of them?
No. Maybe.
No, like, my mom has been giving me some stuff from my grandmother, which is, like, really cool.
Yeah.
And some of it's, like, her journal. And then I'm like, what am I going to do with this?
Yeah, we got to
read it. It's interesting. But then what?
Yeah, journal is pretty cool. You should save that. We got a lot of stuff from Adam's grandparents, and like, yeah, some of it's great, but also like she did like rose mauling, which is like a kind of painting, and she just painted tons and tons of like trinkets and things and like sold them. And it's like, well, not all of these are like
special.
Because
you
to keep.
Also are an artist, and you have a bunch of your own art that's taking up space.
I'm also like hoarding my own art, and I don't know what to do with it. So
it's complicated.
It's hard. It's hard to know what will be valuable in the future.
Yeah, in the long now.
In the long now, yeah.
As they all say.
They all say it.
Yeah. Many people are saying this. all right, that concludes Wiki of the Week. It's time now for What Did I Learn?
What did I learn?
Lisa, what did you learn today?
I didn't really learn anything, but I want to give some advice.
Okay.
And 99% of people already know this. I'm just trying to save that 1% who maybe had forgotten.
Uh-huh.
Don't take a multivitamin on an empty stomach, folks. Don't do it. You'll regret it. You might think you can stomach it. You can't.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Wait, so what happens?
I did this the other day because I forgot that you're not supposed to do this. And I thought, you know, I'm eating breakfast in a half hour. Surely this will be fine.
Right.
It'll just mix in there, whatever. But no, when you take it on empty stomach, your body's like, poison, poison. and I just like, I suddenly like doubled over in the kitchen, and I was like shaking and like trying to make toast so fast that I could like cram toast in there. And as soon as it mixes with food, it's like, oh, nutrients. Okay, I know what this is.
Yeah.
Just learn from my mistake. Public service announcement. What did you learn?
I learned that you should not take a multivitamin on an empty stomach.
You didn't know? Oh my God. I'm so glad I've saved a life today.
That's our show. You can send us wiki pages and other things to babygeniusespodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks to our producer, Rob Pera.
Yeah. Thanks to my brother, Nate Heller, for our theme songs.
Yay.
You can follow me online. I'm at Chef Reactions.
On TikTok. And I am also at Chef Reactions on TikTok. Is it Chef Reactions or Chef Reacts?
I think it's Chef Reactions. I thought it was Chef Reacts last time we talked about it. And then I looked at it and I was like, oh no, I'm a mom. I'm getting the name wrong.
Thought you were going to say I'm a monster. But you said I'm a mom.
Oh boy.
And goodbye.
Yay. Baby geniuses, we know everything. 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 Should we have talked about Elon Musk and the end of Twitter?
Oh, I did have on my thing as one thing to ask you. Have you deleted your Twitter yet? But now we can talk about it later.
We'll talk about it next time. I think there's leave this in. This is a teaser.
There's too much time between this recording and when it drops. Like, too much could change.
Yeah, too much could change.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.